You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
There's something different about you, Mr. Lorio.
Yeah, I was having a good day.
No. No, it's not that.
Sit down.
No.
Sit your ass down.
What could it be?
What are you doing?
There it is. Too much iron in your blood. Mr. Lorio, never trust a beautiful woman, especially one who's interested in you.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Wash man's got
nerves! Make love in the hammock!
What?
Hello and welcome to Film Actually, episode 134 for the 4th of June, 2011. And why does my show notes do that every time? They turn off just as I start to read.
I actually set it up that way.
Oh, thank you very much. I am Dave McVeigh. I am joined in studio by, let's sound off, by...
Wait, oh, so we're going this way? You didn't give us an order. I am Josh and
I'm Richard and stuff.
All right, well, that was a disaster. All right.
Well, that's what happens when you don't pre-plan shit.
You could just go with the flow, dude.
I'd rather embarrass you live on air.
Ah, fair enough. All right, I'm joined by Josh Philpott, and Richard just won't go away.
I had so much fun last week.
Don't listen to him. Don't listen to him.
In fact, I just wanted to thank you all this while I was here on air. I prepared a speech.
All right, let's run with this.
Hello. How about that intro? I guess that's why they call it Film Actually. You guys may not know this, but I consider myself a bit of a loner. I tend to think of myself as a one-man wolf pack. I was alone at first in the pack when David introduced me and invited me on the show. I thought, wait a second, could it be? And now I know for sure. Sorry, I promised myself I wouldn't cry. I just added two more guys to my wolf pack. Three of us wolves shooting the shit together on a podcast, looking for strippers and cocaine. So today, I make a toast. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Cheers, Richard.
We actually had no idea that was coming. Thank
phenomenal work. This is Richard Gray, by the way, from TheRealBits.com and DVDBits.com and at DVDBits on Twitter. And it's a joy to have you back again,
oh,
sir.
God. Thank
you,
sir. It really is.
We had so much fun last week. We said, you've got to come back. And he did. So,
actually, I never left.
No, we've had him like hold up here for a week.
Please, if someone can get me out,
send the police.
Help me.
All right, we have a show to do. Let's
we
get back
do.
To that.
We do have a show. Now, Thrad Geek, actually, we kept talking about how we were really tired yesterday, and yesterday, just tear down the fixtures while you're at it. We were talking about how we were so tired yesterday. That's because something special happened yesterday. Richard, what was it?
Lost it now.
Okay.
We met J.J. Abrams.
We did!
Yep.
Go.
What? No, I had nothing.
You had nothing? Okay.
You guys are doing your JJ thing.
We want to put a very big thank you out to Way Too Blue and Anthony over at Way Too Blue.
And of course, JJ Abrams
well,
as well
for getting
us the
to
time.
That. I'm just saying for organizing the event. Mm. And yes, thank you
where
very much.
Where we met JJ Abrams.
Where we met JJ Abrams. And thank
did
you
we
very
mention
much.
That?
JJ Abrams for spending some time with us. As Anthony put it, some of the top bloggers in Australia.
I like that. I really like that.
Yeah, me too. We'll have the audio of that event out probably Tuesday, actually, on the Film Actually feed.
And I'll get it out on Monday on The Real Bits just to trump you.
Well, you could do that if you really want to.
I would do that.
I'm putting it out tonight. Now we'll have that out very soon. We'll have that out as soon as we can, in fact, because we want to get it out before Super 8 comes out. And yeah, it was just basically a 20-minute sit-down with five of us, the three of us at this table and two extras. And we should probably give a shout-out to Dave while we're here. David from...
Oh, right.
Damn Good Cup.
See, this is confusing. Now I have three Daves I work with. That's just not cool. You guys are...
David Damn Good Cup, who we actually met for the first time yesterday. And he's a really, really good guy. And and we're going to get him on the show as well. We're creating quite a little network of bloggers here at the moment, which I'm very excited about.
We're Australia's top bloggers.
That's right. my only disappointment, because I know he listens to the show, so I'm going to say this, but my only disappointment was we didn't have Matt at our table. From Matt's movie reviews. I would like to have had Matt at our table. I think that would have been like the
Holy Trinity.
Yeah. So that would have been.
But
really
we got good. Courtney.
We got Courtney. Courtney, pleasure to meet you too. And you'll hear her on the interview as well. So yeah, listen for that. I must say, J.J. Abrams came across. He was very, very generous with his time.
He was really tired too. He just got in, and it was that thing where he's like, "Guys, I really want to talk to you, but I'm struggling."
But with that being said, his answers never sounded canned. He sounded like he was really thinking about what he wanted to say.
He took a lot of time with everything.
Yeah, and he gave us some really good answers to some really good questions. So
generally really impressed with him. He was just such a nice dude.
Now, we're reviewing Super 8 next week. We've seen it. So for those who are saying, "Oh, what was it like?" No spoilers. We've actually seen it. And
Darth Vader is Luke's father.
There you go. Man, you spoiled the whole thing.
Sorry.
And E.T. got home. So do go see it, and that way you can join us for the discussion on Saturday when we actually talk about Super 8. Okay.
Fucking A.
Okay. And Snape killed Dumbledore. Says, Mike from Canada is in the house. Hello, Mike from Canada. Yeah, dude. All right. So we actually don't have a lot of feedback. In fact, we have no feedback this week, which I'm very surprised at. We've had feedback every week
for
weeks.
It's probably good because we spent most of the intro introducing introducing himself. I'm not sure how these things work.
All right. So let's finish this introduction really quickly and say this is the official movie podcast of Geek Actually Network, geekactually.com. This week we are going to be reviewing X-Men First Class. Plus, we have a little bit of film news, some new trailers, and a brand new list of five political films, which is at the request of Matt, one of our go back, listen to last week, you'll hear his email, and you'll hear that he wanted us to do this list for him. So, and we figured there's a kind of tie to X-Men. You know, it's got like Cuban Missile Crisis and stuff like that. So we figured we could justify it somehow this week.
Yeah.
We were trying to come up with a list, and we're going, well, what are we going to do? Five mutant films? I mean, you know, what are you going to come up with on a list this week, you know? So, all right. So we'll go back to what we used to do in this section before feedback took over our lives, which is we kind of just kind of round table this very quickly and just say, what have we been watching this week? I mean, aside from Super 8, obviously, we've all seen that. But
Twice
even. Sorry, Richard.
Except Richard. Letting the team down.
So, Richard, what have you been watching this week? I know you watch a lot of DVDs.
You know, I've completely forgotten what I'm watching. I'm bringing up a list now, so let's go quickly to Josh while I'm trying to remember what I watched this week.
I think it's a bad sign when you watch so many movies you can't remember what
it's
you
like,
watched.
Seriously, I've seen at the cinema this year, it's been 100. I think it's 100 on the nose.
That's a pretty good effort.
So yeah. I'm feeling pretty good about that right now.
That's pretty good. All right, Josh, what have you been watching this week?
I sat down and stupidly watched... wait, I'm getting a deja vu. No, I think I didn't get these until the start of this week, so it definitely was this week. I watched all three of the Urban Legend films. That was a waste of time. I shit you not, they get worse the further they go
And they start
along.
At a pretty low point.
Oh, yeah, so. No. Like, you know, got to the end of the first one, you're like, wow, that really was the quarter was as good as I remembered it to be. Because I remember one was going to be my station point. It's like, I'll watch one, and I'll, you know, that'll be all right. And then it's two and three will no doubt be crap. But it's like, I watched that, and I was like, wow, that actually does fit in the crap category. So then from there, we went to two, which is... barely related in any resemblance to number one, but sort of still has a couple of the key characters that were like third tier. So it's like you're not getting the main characters, you're not getting the ones below that. You get like the security guard from the first one or whatever.
movie was terrible, really, really goddamn awful. And then 3 came along, and oh my god.
And the scariest part of all is, as I said to Josh when he told me about this, I actually didn't even know they made a 3.
Yeah, no, and the worst thing was, the only reason I sat down after struggling through 2 was because number 3 was directed by the girl that did Pet Sematary.
Hmm.
And I was like, wow. Pet Sematary was a pretty cool movie. I'll sit down. This movie is ridiculous. It's just no budget spin on effects, no budget spin on acting. I mean, you know how we talk about porn-grade actors?
Mm-hmm.
This is like the tier of people that couldn't make it into porn because they were like, sweetie, you may be hot, but you're just, you have nothing going for you. That's the people we got in this film.
Oh, dear.
And then on top of that, the only connection between the original films and this was literally like a piece of paper in a news clipping or something that doesn't actually have a connection. They're just like, hey, look at this. I just found this, and it's got the title of the original film School. Oh. Well, anyway, moving right along to the rest of the crap we have to show people. Yeah, no, it was the worst movie horror experience I've had in quite a while. So, yeah, definitely don't recommend that. I also went back and watched 30 Days of Night.
Oh, okay.
Which, after watching it again, I really need to give that film a lot more respect than I do, because it's a beautiful looking film. Like, it's just gorgeously
shot. This is
shot.
The director who went on to do Twilight, isn't it? Is that the director I'm thinking of? 30 Days of Night, David Spade? David Wade, something like that.
I don't know. We'll have to look it up.
Somebody check him out.
David Slade. Thank you, Mike from West Canada.
Yeah. Thank you. He's the one who directed 30 Days of Night, isn't he?
Yeah.
And that was a big criticism because he came out with 30 Days of Night and basically twittered all over the place that the Twilight films were an abomination and this and that.
Yes, I remember.
And saying how this is terrible and then suddenly signed on to do Eclipse.
That's a really terrible photo.
If you look at his photo on Internet Movie Database, that guy's
a bruiser.
We were talking about beards before the show started. Now that's a beard.
Yeah,
he's got nothing else going.
And then what was ironic was that he signed on to do Eclipse and removed all of his Twitter posts. It's like, I didn't say that.
I don't know what.
But he also did
about
Hard Candy, which I don't know if you've seen.
I haven't actually seen Hard Candy.
No, yeah. I mean, I haven't seen
which
it,
which is
I
an
know.
Awesome film.
Yeah,
it's the only film I've been where they've stopped it in the middle of the in the cinema. Because someone was having a panic attack.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. We hated that person, but still.
Yeah, yeah. I was about to say, that's a talk about disrupting the film-going experience.
Yeah. But look, I mean, it's well shot, and I mean, it does kind of fall apart towards the end, but there is a certain level of bleakness and tension that you can't kind of get in a lot of films nowadays. And
I kind of felt bleak and tense after Twilight, so, you know, I can see where it's coming from.
Well, they probably picked him up because we're like, we need to remove all emotion from everyone. Honestly, though, I have a huge Josh, what's his name, the lead character? Josh Hartnett.
Yeah,
he doesn't do his usual level of performance in that film. I actually found
him
a little
more wooden than usual.
That's pretty much where I was getting at. I was trying to say it nicely, but thank you, Richard.
Which is good, because it's a film about vampires. You need something to carve into steaks.
Oh, snap! There we go. All right, well, that's me. Next.
Look, I'm just going to mention one, because after watching the Super 8 film this week and taking my son to see it, we kind of... He's on a bit of an Amblin kick now, and he wants to see all these films that we talk about all the time. So we sat down and watched Young Sherlock Holmes, which we had a ball with, and he really enjoyed. And it's funny, watching it again, you realize that it's actually probably one of the weaker entries into the Amblin fare.
Yeah.
But it's got that flavor. It's got that style. It's got the adventure, the kids. And he wanted to watch it particularly because of the kids. But the one he really wants to watch, we're going to watch tonight. So I was very proud of him when he actually said, maybe we should watch Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And I went, son, you're on. So that's on tonight. But, Young Sherlock Holmes was actually was a lot of fun going back and revisiting. I still to this day find it really hard to believe it's a Barry Levinson film. It doesn't feel like a Barry Levinson film in any way, shape, or form. This is a man who made things like Diner. You know, and you go, he made this fun and frivolity, and Barry Levinson is not known for fun and frivolity. That's not what he does, you know. He did things like Avalon, which is serious and deep, you know. And you go, what the hell? So have you found your list, Richard?
Yeah, I have actually. I didn't watch a lot this week for some reason, because I don't know if we mentioned this, but we met J.J. Abrams yesterday, so
cool.
I was preparing a fair bit for that. You know, I saw Super 8, of course. I watched a few things. I caught up with The Tunnel since I was here last week because loved it.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good. I'm glad you did. I spoke to two people this week that didn't like it.
Sorry, which one was this?
This is The Tunnel.
The Tunnel.
The Tunnel, all right.
Yeah. I actually caught up with two people that didn't like it. One of which I will give him the credit of saying that he is currently in production of his own horror film, and therefore he was like, I could have done more with that budget.
I hate those people, though.
No, look, and I think it's more just probably he just...
Professional jealousy?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I'm not going to put it down to whatever it was, but look... I think he has a different... He sounds like he's more of a splatter horror kind of a guy. I think it may have been a different movie he wanted when he went in. And look, I mean, each to their own. I actually have had... the few discussions I've had with him are usually about that sort of thing, where it's like, this was a better film, and I'm like, but this did this. And it's like, you can tell his drive is towards the gore.
Right.
And so each to their own.
So what was your final thoughts on it?
Well, you'd have to go to therealbits.com to find out.
Nice plug!
I really did enjoy it. I mean, I thought that everything you guys said last week was valid. It was one of those films that just really takes you by surprise. It's tense as hell for the whole part.
So. I found myself squirming in my seat, and that doesn't often happen. So I found myself going, I'm actually a little uncomfortable here.
Yeah.
And, you know.
I think you said it last week, Josh, you certainly get what you pay for.
Absolutely. Yeah. Biggest factor here is it's free, and it's still free, and even those in America can get it. Anybody can get it. Go get it. Do it now. Download it. Do it now. Do it for life. No, it's good fun, and it is well worth downloading and having a look at. Okay, should we move on to a feature film review?
Yes.
We've got to spar up here because I think we're going to be having a little bit of conflict here. All right, this week we saw X-Men First Class, directed by Matthew Vaughn, written by Ashley Miller, Zach Stentz, Jane Goldman, and Matthew Vaughn, based on a story by Bryan Singer and Sheldon Turner, and based, again, on top of that, on the Marvel Comics characters. Funnily enough, never mentioned in the credits.
Yeah?
They don't actually say based on the Marvel characters created by. If you go to IMDb, it doesn't even have it under the screenwriting credits. I think that's very odd. All right. It stars James McAvoy, Michael Fassbender, Kevin Bacon, Jennifer Lawrence, Rose Byrne, January Jones, Nicholas Hoult, Oliver Platt, and many other young people I've never heard of before. But those are the key people. Now, this synopsis actually comes straight from 20th Century Fox this time. And they say, before Charles Xavier and Eric Lynscher took the names Professor X and Magneto, they were two young men discovering their powers for the first time. Before they were arch enemies, they were closest of friends, working together with other mutants, some familiar, some new, to stop the greatest threat the world has ever known. In the process, a rift between them opened, which began the eternal war between Magneto's Brotherhood and Professor X's X-Men. And that comes straight from 20th Century Fox. Let's have a look at the trailer, and then we'll come back and talk about this. So this is the trailer for X-Men First Class.
You have the chance to become part of something much bigger than yourself.
What do you know about me?
Everything.
A new species is being born. Help me guide it. Shape it. Lead it.
Time for the tour.
Idea what I'd give to feel
normal.
You want society to accept you, but you can't even accept yourself.
Should we have to hide?
Tomorrow, mankind will know that mutants exist. They'll fear us, and that fear will turn to hatred.
Not if we stop a war. Not if we risk our lives doing so.
We have it in us to be the better men.
We already are.
It shall be the policy of this nation to regard any nuclear missile launched from Cuba as an attack by the Soviet Union on the United States.
They're just kids.
No, they were kids.
You ready for this?
Let's find out.
The cost of freedom is always high. No foreseen precisely what course it will take. One path we shall never choose, and that is the path of surrender.
Listen to me very carefully, my friend. Killing will not bring you peace.
Peace was never an option.
Okay, so that was the trailer for X-Men First Class. Who wants to go first? I think we've got a contrary opinion here at the table. So should we give the positive or the negative first?
Oh, I don't mind.
Go negative first.
Yeah,
go
ahead. All right. Yeah, sure, why not?
All right, Josh, override, you're up.
Override me afterwards, why don't you?
Yeah, why not? That's what I do.
All right. Well, look, I'm going to go straight out there and say that I can't say that I hated this film. That's not what I'm trying to be like at all.
That's what you said yesterday.
There are scenes that are really well done in this. The scene, and again, these aren't spoilers in any way or form. The scene with Magneto in the bar is a fantastic scene. Mm-hmm. The whole end piece of Cuba, which you see moments of in the trailer, is all fantastic. There are well done scenes. My problem is that the rest of this film was an absolute pile of trash. There was the X-Men B team, which was probably my first problem with this thing, which is just like the collection of the ones that they could use because they had already used all the good ones. So they started going through and picking people like a giant pixie who hawks fireball loogies. and we're not talking about breeze fire. We're talking about small, tiny balls of fire. That's it. That's really silly. Banshee is just the dumbest looking. He's a ginger-topped, carrot-topped kid who looks like he hasn't quite made it out of puberty that can scream really loud. What? Darwin, who can adapt to any situation. What does that even mean? What does that mean? He can just change the way he looks or feels. Yeah, no. It was just the powers weren't interesting. The characters were paper thin. None of the action was really that great, which we'll come back to in just a minute.
Yes,
we found out a very interesting point about this film.
We're actually going to open the phone lines on that as well, just in case we can get some feedback on that.
Yeah.
So,
look, I didn't really enjoy this movie. There were scenes where I was like, I'm in, and then I'd be out almost immediately afterwards. The only person that really gave me what I wanted in this film was Fassbender. He was absolutely amazing. Every moment he was on screen, he just tore a hole in the
gym. For those who don't know, he's playing Magneto in this one, the young Magneto. He's fantastic.
It almost, to me, this feels like the Magneto Origins film they wanted to make, and they just had to add in the rest and basically put it together as one film, because apparently it wouldn't sell heavily enough as just him. Hmm. Apart from that, I wanted to say that, look, the film that we saw is apparently not the finished film.
Let's jump in here at this point now. Mm-hmm. Josh came to me and I said, "So Josh, what did you think of it?" And he told me his thoughts of it. And one of the criticisms he had about this film was he immediately said, "Oh, and I hated the fact that all of the action scenes were cut. It's like, you know, they would start to do something and they would just cut away."
Yeah.
And I went, "Wait a minute." I said, "That's not what happened. That's not what I saw." And we started to have, when we went to meet J.J. Abrams, did we say we met J.J. Abrams yesterday?
We did.
When we met J.J. Abrams yesterday, we were in a room full of bloggers, so it was the perfect time to bring this up. And people had seen all different screenings of this film. Some people had seen it in the evening screenings, some people had seen it in the morning screenings, and so forth. And there was a definite rift in this room, because some people were saying, "Yeah, that's what I saw." And other people, like Richard and I, are going, "That's not what we saw. We saw..." You know, as an example, a minor spoiler, there is a scene in the film where Kevin Bacon's Sebastian Shaw has a hand grenade in his hand, and he basically absorbs the energy from something, and he can then push that energy out. In this scene, he's got the hand grenade in his hand, he's holding it, the hand grenade explodes in his hands, he then absorbs this energy and then literally touches another person, and the guy flies across the room and smashes against the wall.
Yeah.
What Josh saw was the hand grenade go off and it went to another scene.
Yeah.
Wow.
No. The hand grenade went off, he collected the energy, and then he went like that, and it kind of faded out. It didn't actually show him flying across
the
room.
So you see him just touching the guy and the customer of the scene. And there was a couple of more of these.
The one that really annoyed me, because the scene didn't make sense to me, is there's a scene later on in the film where a character dies, and I won't say which one, and they later on say we couldn't even bury his body. Now, that doesn't make any sense to me, because where we were, it kind of faded to a white screen and we have no idea what happened
yet
to that character.
Richard and I saw the rest of it. Saw the rest of that scene. And so you understand why they couldn't bury the body. And so we sat there going, wow, this is amazing. So what has happened? My only thought is we are actually concurrently running two different prints running around Sydney at the moment. Mm. One of them is cut and one of them is not. Now, we're going to open the phone lines because it's going to take time to actually do what they want to do. I want to know if you've seen X-Men First Class. We just want to know which version you saw. So the phone lines are open, and it's I'll put it up on screen for those who are watching live. It's Sydney number 02801131167, and for those who are outside of Sydney, you can just use the Skype ID Geek Actually, all one word. Please call in. So if you've seen X-Men First Class, doesn't matter. We just want to know which version, even those from overseas, if you saw it in America or what have you, we want to know which version. Did you see these scenes cut like this, or did you actually get the full-length scenes? And we'll continue on while we're waiting. Richard, can you just keep an eye on that screen in case any calls come through? We'd love to hear from you, by the way, guys, so please do call in if you want to call in. All right, so as a counterpoint to all of this, though, I have to say I actually quite enjoyed the film.
And look, there are going to be a lot of people that do. There are always
Absolutely. And I think part of this may be the fact that we actually saw a different film than you did, obviously. I do agree with you. We did have the second tier mutants in this film. There's no doubt about that. And I would have actually preferred them to have gone back to an origin of the real First Class, which was Cyclops and Iceman and Beast and Angel. These would have been seeing them all young and see the original First Class would have been, for me personally, much more entertaining. Instead, you're right. We got this weird little pixie and Darwin and Havoc and all these characters who are like kind of like the second tier of X-Men, and they're all from the comic books, but none of them are particularly interesting.
I spoke to Dave Kaziki, who's a good friend of ours, and he's a fan of the old school comics, and he was like, this was the original team, and I said, I don't care.
It wasn't actually, but that's beside the point. I've read the early X-Men's. The first team, I can tell you, the Uncanny X-Men, the very, very first X-Men, issue one.
But the First Class series, what they're basing
First Class
on.
Series, I'm actually reading that at the moment, which I hate, by the way. I just want you to know I hate the First Class series. First Class series is Cyclops, Jean Grey, Angel, Beast, and Iceman. And I hate the series, and make this very clear right now, the film is actually not based on that series at all. It's just used the name. Because what they've done is they've said, these are the stories that happen in between all of the
other
stories.
The characters, though, he was explaining it to me as the characters that they're choosing are actually the original class, because these are the people, like, as an example, the dude with the explosion at the chest is
Scott's father.
Scott's father, and the dude that was playing, I've forgotten his name, Azazel. Like him and Mystique make
that's in debate. There's been a long debate over Nightcrawler's origin for a long time, because some people actually think Beast was his father as well. So there was a lot of that's why he's blue as well. So there's
I don't even know, because this is one thing. I've never been a fan of the original style comics anyway. Like, I actually find them just a little bit too, I don't know. I think because I come from a generation of people that don't enjoy these really sort of soft edged comics that we used to have back in the day, I have no interest in them. So to me,
well, then in that case, I'll say right now, do not read X-Men First Class, that series, because that is as soft as you get, because what it is actually a children's comic. So basically what they've done is they've said, this is like the further adventures of the X-Men, the First Class. It's set nowadays, so they're actually carrying cell phones and stuff like that, so it's like the twilight of the X-Men, but it's the original team, and they're acting like they've never been on any of these other adventures. This is like the dumbest comic book, and each one is self-contained, and it's almost like you almost wait for them to come out with the moral at the end. And, you know, knowing is half the battle, you know? It's like, it feels like Saturday morning cartoon stuff. It's awful.
Yuck.
It really is. It's a bad comic book. And when I heard they were making the movie, I went, I'll have to read the comic book. And when I started reading the comic book, I said, God, I hope this is not the movie. You know, because this is terrible. And luckily it's not. They just chose the name and then they decided to set it in the 60s and actually kind of make this first. But then if you're going to do that, go back to the real First Class. And the real First Class was that original team. And that original team, which is the team that is in the first X-Men movie, minus a few, because Iceman wasn't there. He came later. But, you know, whatever. We're getting into semantics. But the point is that I would like to have seen our traditional X-Men characters, but in that yellow surrounding. That would, because like Havoc is Scott Summers' father, but he came around later.
Yeah,
you know, much later. They introduced him into the comics much later.
It was about 6-7 years later. I'm just looking at Wiki now, and it was quite a few years later. It was, I think, the original lineup according to this was Cyclops, Iceman, Angel, Beast, and Marvel Girl.
Which is Jean Grey.
Yeah, that's right.
And this was before Beast was furry. He just had big feet, and he was a big hulking guy, and he just had big feet and so forth. So there's a few things about the origin of it annoying me. But as a film, a standalone film by itself, I actually found it very entertaining. But I had an issue with this film. I turned to Richard, because Richard and I saw it together, and I turned to Richard afterwards, and I kind of went, that was good. And let me throw some buzzwords up here, some key words here. That's solid. It was entertaining. It was a step above the last two X-Men films that had come out. And all these basically familiar words. And all I could think was the one thing I seem to be missing here is excitement. It was much later that I was talking to Josh about it. And I said, the problem here is I figured it out. It has no wow factor. You know, and that was the biggest issue, was you didn't come out and go, as an example, we're going to review it next week. But as an example, we walked out of Super 8 and we couldn't stop talking about it, you know, and it was like there was a wow factor involved in this. Whereas you walk out of X-Men, you go, yeah, it was good.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, and that was the issue. And yes, you pick on key things. Michael Fassbender is brilliant as Magneto. Absolutely. James McAvoy does a really good job as Xavier.
Yeah.
But with his relationship with Fassbender, that's the key to it.
And that's the thing. He would be such a weak character on his own.
Yeah.
And this isn't McAvoy's fault. It's just like his character is a mind kind of a guy. Like he needs someone, he needs people to control. Otherwise there is no excitement in what he can do. And they needed the two of them, but it's just I outside him... Fassbender himself, every other character just fell flat with me.
Digital Angel says Dora the Explorer meets a mutant gene. Before we go any further, Richard, what was your opinions?
I don't know what to think now. No, look, I think I'm in the same boat as David on this one. It was, I really enjoyed it, but it was missing something.
Yeah.
And I think given all that build up, and it looks so good in the promos, it looks so good in the trailers, I thought, this is it. This is going to be the X-Men film that conquers all other X-Men film. And it wasn't that. And does that make it a bad film? Absolutely not.
No. Because
it's still a good film. I think one of the problems is, and just listening to what you were talking about for the last few minutes, was it doesn't quite decide what it wants to be.
Yeah.
And
that's a good point.
You've got these other three movies, or four movies, if you include Wolverine. And it kind of wants to reboot, because it kind of wants to take it in its own direction. But it still seems a little bit indebted to those other films. It's exactly what you said. We can't use those other characters because we know what happens to them. Now, if they'd actually gone with the original
lineup, would have benefited from not doing that.
Absolutely.
And actually just go outside the canon and just create your own
thing. I was actually kind of hoping this would be a reboot. Yeah. And it's not. It does try and fit with
it.
They either
completely reboot it or actually do the origin story as it was in the comics. Yeah. I mean, they're the two options they should have gone with.
Yeah.
Didn't do either of those.
I would have lined up for an X-Men origin story.
Yeah.
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 A real one, you know?
I mean, look, there's a lot of the other thing is too. I mean, look, a lot of the drama is sapped out of it by the fact that you kind of know, because they've gone the route they have, you kind of know where it's going to end up.
Yeah.
And you have a whole lot of, and that's the origin of that moments in there. And
I think it was my lovely girlfriend who actually was the one that pointed it out. She was saying that she just got so sick and tired of the pandering they were doing in every one of these statements, because it was so exposition-based. Like,
actually, you're right, because every time something would come up that does lead onto another film, it's almost like they winked at cameras,
It's almost like as they were saying it, they would kind of lean towards you, like they were like, and then that's how that happened. I mean, you're just like, I don't need to know, thank you.
There's actual quotes, and I hope this is not a spoiler in any way, shape, or form, but people actually say things like, and you could be called Professor X.
Yeah, I know, and that's exactly what I agreed with her on. I was like, no, I totally see what you mean. It is that painful when you're doing it. Because it's like, no, I'm sorry, I don't need to know this. And I don't even know who you guys are. But I don't want to be told like that. Yeah. It's like, names and stuff like that aren't important to me. It's like, if your character's that good, you can sell me on the character. I don't need to know
that
your name
is Havoc.
And that's
actually one of the issues with this film, is the fact that you've got such strong leads with Fassbender and McAvoy and Kevin Bacon, who is...
Oh,
awesome.
Dude, and no, sorry, that was my other thing. Yeah. Kevin Bacon is amazing.
Kevin Bacon as Sebastian Shaw is fantastic. And I have to give props to January Jones, who I'm not a fan of, and we ripped apart on Unknown. But I liked her in this. I thought she had a really cold, glassy exterior, which is what she had to have, you know?
I've got to add two things to this.
Josh doesn't look impressed. Hold on. Before we go any further, I need to know why I've got that look on your face.
No, she was shit, in my opinion. And in only
you didn't like
opinion.
Emma.
No, I fucking hate her as an actress. I wish people would stop giving her roles. Yes, we all know she can play cold, calculating bitch. That's all she can do. She doesn't act. She just stands there and just looks like she's acting.
Which is exactly what she required.
I'm going to correct you there. She stood there in her underwear.
Even better.
And
that's kind of what I'm getting at. I'm sorry. You can be as pretty as you freaking want. You didn't give me 1 second of acting talent. What you said is lack of acting, not acting. She just stood there and she said her lines.
This is where we can say this is something to be said for typecasting, because we needed her to be exactly what she is, and she did that and she pulled that off, because that's exactly what Emma Frost
there was
is.
There was no level of like soul or depth or anything like that. I didn't care if she died or if she lived or anything. There was nothing about her character. Even when she was being strangled, I didn't care.
I disagree on that one. I actually think she pulled that off.
Again, dude,
and that's fine. And that's fine. The one I was disappointed with was Jennifer Lawrence. I have to say that I was absolutely blown away by Jennifer Lawrence in Winter's Bone. I thought she was
brilliant,
remarkable. And then I saw her as well at the Academy Awards, and she looked so different, and she was gorgeous, and you know, and all this. And then you see her as Mystique in this, and she kind of looks like she's carrying a bit of puppy fat on her, and she's flat.
It's like chibi Mystique.
So she doesn't have the sensuality that was brought to that role by what's her name again? Stamos
Rebecca Stamos.
That's the one. She didn't have that sensuality. You know,
Stamos is one shot on camera. Sorry if that's a spoiler.
Well, there's one of the spoilers.
Yeah. Oh come on, that isn't a spoiler at all.
There's a brief cameo by Stamos.
Exactly. Her one moment on screen was better than the entire acting.
Blink and you'll miss it, though. I was disappointed because she's a very major character in this. And I just felt she was flat. I just thought she wasn't bringing much to it.
And again, another problem with the whole exposition-based thing. Their line backwards and forwards between characters about mutant and proud... I'm sorry, but I almost gagged, man. That was just the cheesiest thing I'd ever heard. I'm like, really, guys? Come on.
Yeah, we've been walking that tightrope since the first film, and this one kind of crossed it a little bit far. Anyway, you were going
to
say...
There are ways to say it without it being cheesy, dude. I mean, like, the line always still hits hard in Spider-Man where he says, with great power comes great responsibility. That is a powerful line delivered well, and it's not cheesy or camp, and it's a very strong thing that
completely
kids...
Completely cliche now, but at the time.
That's the thing. I mean, that's the difference. You can do these sort of things without...
It's like there's that one line in the Captain America trailer where even just from the trailer we go, there's your line where he says the weak man knows the
power,
the benefit, what is it? He knows the responsibility or whatever it is of being strong. Yeah. You know, I can't remember what the exact line is, but it's got a lot of weight in the trailer.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
You were going to say, Richard.
I was going to say it's red shirt syndrome, this movie. It's like it's Star Trek. You know, every time they go on an away mission, it's the dude in the red shirt that's going to get killed. And I think the whole movie was like that. We said at the start that it was like it's full of people that we know aren't going to be that significant in the X-Men
universe.
Well, and
also, once again, because of the nature of it being this prequel, you sit there and go, you're not in a later film. You're not in a later film.
So it's like they go away on this big away team, you're thinking, okay, when's the scene when they snuff it?
Yeah.
You know? And sure enough, one by one.
And as my wonderful black friend pointed out at the time, he just leaned over to me in the cinema and went, black guy died first. And it's just like, he's been waiting to say that for like 3 years, man. He hasn't had a film where that's happened in so long. He's just like, Yep, there we go.
And for a film that's its whole thing is like, you know, about rights, why did they why did they kill the black guy minutes after introducing him on screen?
Oh dude, it was great.
Sorry, that was a major spoiler.
Sorry about that, guys.
You don't know what. There's more than one. In the
no, film. There isn't.
Oh, wow.
There really isn't.
We might have just found another problem with the film.
80s horror film.
I think we just ran into another big problem with the film. Oh, dear. All right, so let's talk of a couple of the positives here. Nobody's called in, so we don't know whether anybody's had this issue or not. But just to let you know that if you do see. All right, actually, I'll go one step further. Forget what version you see in the cinema. I guarantee when this thing comes out on DVD, it's going to carry the little tag on the front of the box that says special extended version.
Absolutely.
You know, because all these scenes that were cut are obviously a print from somewhere.
Yeah.
And they're going to be able to promote this as a DVD with all these extra scenes in it now because all this...
So if you see...
Damn you, Fox!
So if you see special unrated version, don't expect to see, you know, James McAvoy in his underwear as well.
No. You're just going to see the ends of those scenes that you probably should have seen in the first place.
Absolutely.
That we got to see, for funnily enough. So I was actually going to go see this film again last night. I was going to take my son to see it, but we were all so tired that we've agreed to go see it on Tuesday. But I was hoping to see it again before the show just because the... print that they have at Randwick apparently is this cut version. This is the one Josh saw. So I was hoping to see that so that I could actually see for myself what was cut. I'll report back next week what is cut. So.
We should point out, though, and we were talking about this before we went on, that this film cost $100 million less than X3.
Yeah.
And was put together, as you were fond of pointing out, David, in 9 months.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal effort from Matthew Vaughn. Really, he actually walked away from X3 early in production because of how short the production window was, and he really didn't think... he was still a fledgling director pretty much at that point, and he basically said, I just can't do it in that short amount of time. I didn't want to be away from my family that long, blah, 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 all these reasons. And now to come back on to X-Men First Class and literally only get 9 months to put a film together. And as he pointed out in an interview I read recently... the difference between this and X-Men 3 was in X-Men 3, the world was already established and it was cast. Whereas in this one, he had to start from scratch. And he only had 9 months to do it. So I look, props to Vaughn for pulling off what he pulled off in such a short period of time.
You know what? Even I'll give him that.
And once again, another slap down to Fox and say, what do you expect if you're only going to give people 9 months to do this? He should have had a 2012 release window and put this out summer 2012. He would have had an extra year to put this film together, and then he would have been able to put even more into it. And Vaughn is a good filmmaker, and Jane Goodman, who was brought on, she's the writer of Kick-Ass, was brought on to polish the script, and she's a good writer, and she would have had more time to work on this, and everybody would have had more time.
I think everybody just got a little ripped off in this, man.
And once again, it's Fox, and we've talked about this on the show many times. Fox mistreats their product. When it comes to the superhero stuff, the Fantastic Four, the
Daredevil,
Elektra.
Oh, dude, even
they mistreat
TV,
their stuff
man.
Constantly.
Go into TV as well. I mean, all of anything by Joss Whedon.
Firefly. anything by Joss Whedon, exactly.
It's just like, I don't know whether they're trying to keep them in check and they're beating them so that they'll be good
it's
children.
Like they don't
I don't
trust
quite
their
know
product.
What they're doing here. It's the weirdest thing with Fox. They'll let some shows run for like 9 seasons, but anything sci-fi, it's just don't take a risk.
And they have great product. They have got the licenses on some great stuff, and they're just screwing it constantly, over and over and over again. So with all that being said, let's round this up. With all that being said, I do recommend the film. I think the film is actually a good film. Yeah. It's okay. And if I put it on a scale, as I put in my review, you put it on a scale, I think it is... I think the gold standard here, and Josh disagrees with me, but I think the gold standard here is X-Men 2. I think Richard agrees. I think
they're
X-Men
both
2,
good.
Yeah, I think X-Men 2 is a great
one
film.
One and two are fantastic.
And I like one a lot, but I think X-Men 2 was one of those rare cases where the second one just excelled the first.
Yep.
And if I was going to put this on a scale, I'd say that this film is as good as the first one. It's not as good as the second, and shits all over 3 and Wolverine, you know?
Yeah. Which
wouldn't be hard. So it is a good film. I think it has problems. And once again, it does lack a little bit of wow factor. But, you know, it is a good X-Men film, you know, and it's well worth having a look at. And I would say, for my friends, I'd say I'd recommend it. I'd say go have some fun. Richard.
I would recommend it as well. I really enjoyed it. It just didn't overwhelm me the way I thought it was going to, but does that make it a bad movie? Absolutely not.
No.
So.
Josh, Josh.
This film sets us back to where we were with the original X-Men films. Like you've said before, I'm in X-Men 1, though I love it because it gave us something we hadn't had at the time, which was an actually half-decent comic book movie that wasn't just cool because you got to see them live and out in the flesh, but actually was a half-decent film. 1 and 2 were good. This feels like 3 to me. It's like this is something that if my friends that weren't into comics went to see, they'd be like, well, that was fucking stupid. And if you're not into comics or you're not into geeky stuff, you are not going to like this movie. There is nothing in there for someone that doesn't like that kind of a movie. It's a relatively average kind of a movie to start with. And then on top of it, the powers and the special effects and the action, as you said, there's nothing wow factor-ish about them. So if you went into this and you weren't into X-Men in any way or form, you would just think that this is stupid. And I would totally be okay with that. I wouldn't be able to defend this film.
Just on the special effects side of things, I just want to mention one thing really quickly as well. I put this in my review, and it seems really superficial, but other people mentioned it yesterday, so I think it is worth mentioning. And that is, they really failed Beast.
Yeah, absolutely.
I turned over to when, you know, the first shot when he comes out and you finally see him as Beast, and he started walking towards the thing. I just leaned over and started tapping and kissing her, and I was like, dude, it's Teen Wolf.
Very true.
Couldn't help it.
And I think the problem is that we had already established Beast in X-Men 3, and the makeup on Kelsey Grammer was really good.
Oh, yeah.
And this is awful.
Awful.
You know, it's like he's had just gone in for bad plastic surgery.
Yes.
There's a guy in the US, and I'm not sure where I think he lives in Las Vegas or close to it, and he's surgically altered himself to look like a cat.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've seen it. If you look him up on the web.
Well, just what's her name? Wildenstern or whatever her name is.
Oh, yeah, Bride of. Yeah, Wildenstern. Yeah. And anyway, looks like that. Looks like it can't move his mouth at some point.
Oh, dear. No, he does. Yes.
And he's got these little tiny teeth sticking out. So it's
And then to like help him along, they obviously realized there was a problem. They always seem to shoot him in slightly soft focus, which kind of blurred the edges of everything. The Beast makeup was very disappointing. So. I think that was a big letdown. Absolutely. And I actually felt that kind of way about the makeup work in general. The makeup work in general is kind of substandard compared to past X-Men films.
Yeah.
All the makeup.
I could agree with that better. Yeah. Absolutely.
So the digital work was okay, but the makeup they seem to have skimped on. That may have been where they saved their money.
Wow, $100 million worth of makeup.
Maybe not. No, that was the cast. Remember, that was the cast of nobody.
Yes, yeah, true.
All right, so we've got two yeses and a no, but those yeses, I think, are with the provision
qualified yeses.
We say it's good, it's entertaining, just don't expect the world to change. You know.
Yeah, well, actually, can I ask the one question then before we move on? Would you suggest it's somebody that doesn't like comic book films?
No.
Exactly. No, that's just that. That basically is. Let's
clarify that. Somebody who is into dramas and blah blah blah. This is not the film to convert them. Mm. Okay. Somebody who likes sci-fi or fantasy. Yeah, that's fine. You know?
I think so.
Yeah.
No, I disagree slightly because it's got that little bit of historical period setting edge to it, which I think some people will find attractive in the same way that people kind of got into the Watchmen film. Like it or hate it, it had that similar sort of thing.
Zenfu in our chat room, by the way, we go out live every week, so you can join our chat room. Zenfu in our chat room has said, you made me even more interested to see it, Josh. I don't... Hello, we have a call. That's loud. Where is it? Hi, you're on Film Actually. Who's this?
Hi, this is Julian from Melbourne.
Julian from Melbourne, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Sorry, the boys are scrambling for headphones right now because they can't hear you.
Headphones. I'm worried to put them on because it
What can we do for you today?
I just thought I'd call in and comment on the new X-Men film and what you've been talking about.
Now, first thing I want to ask you is, did you see the cut or uncut version?
I'm actually not sure. I saw it in theaters, just general release in Melbourne last night. And I'm assuming it was a cut one.
Okay.
I think it sounds like most of the cinema versions.
I have a suspicion that we saw, because Richard and I saw the critic screening of it. And even between the critic screenings, though, there seems to have been difference. So it's very odd. All right, what did you think of the film?
I liked it. I thought there was very distinct differences between the three acts. So I thought the first act was really well done. I thought the setup of the character of Magneto through Fassbender was just terrific. I thought that scene in Argentina in the bar, as well as in France, was just perfectly directed.
Yep.
However, I thought the final act was just shoddily made action, drawing every character from the movie into this one big battle scene, and didn't really pull off. And that final bit with Xavier is a bit corny as well.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Absolutely, dude.
I like elements of that ending scene. Like, I love the submarine being pulled out of the water and stuff.
That's your wow moment.
But the problem is they gave it away in the trailer.
When that's your only one, it's kind of like you kind of think you would hold some of your cards to your chest instead of just letting out the best moments of the movie.
Well, this is a problem with trailers
generally. And I thought as well with the cameos, that you had two really well done cameos, and then you had that scene where they're searching for all the mutants and you see all of these characters which don't show up in the film, but it's like, oh, look, they show up in the later films or the older films, whichever way you look at it.
So you obviously saw the white-haired girl go by.
And I mean, they tried really hard to keep it in canon, but to me, like I was saying before, I think that's its actual downfall. It's like, because you're right, it's like when they're actually focusing on creating their own story and expanding out that start bit that we saw in the original X-Men film, it's like that was the one good scene that works. And it's like, you're right, the second and third act are where it starts to fail. It's like the first act opens so strong.
I think it's because it moves away from that kind of the aspect in the comic books, which is that very international drama, and it's very focused on the political at times in the comic books, and then you just lose it for a very kind of generic bad guy storyline.
Yeah, and as Josh said, they tried to put it in by saying mutant and proud, but it doesn't work.
No, it's done shoddily.
Yeah, it's a little too late is really what it comes down to, and kind of cheesy in the way that's handled as well. But overall, though, did you enjoy the experience or not?
I did. I thought with the time that Matthew Vaughn was given on this, he did a great job, I think, as well, with a lower budget. It worked. I still think that if it was produced by AMC and Lionsgate Television and produced as a TV series, it could have been a really fantastic kind of period drama setting it up.
Now, that is a series I would watch.
And I think you're really right. If you had a bit more time to expand out these characters, the kids, you would have had a little bit more care about what happened with them, but you don't because of the short amount of time you have to work with their storylines. I think you're really right. TV was the best place for this.
Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
Chris.
Is it Chris?
Is it Chris? Did you say?
Julian.
Julian. Sorry. Julian.
How did
Julian.
You get Chris?
I don't know. Julian, our chat room is actually asking, are you in the chat room? And what's your username in the chat room if you are?
No, I'm not in it because I haven't registered up as a user. I am on Twitter, but yeah.
You got to come into our chat room one day, dude. We're gonna have to let you go because we're gonna continue on. But thank you so much
for calling in. Yeah, it's always nice to get new people.
That's cool. Richard knows me. He's been working with me for the last few months.
Richard. Hi. Hello. I will get my copy to you by the end of the week, probably in Sydney. Yes, right. Sydney Film Festival next week. See you then.
Cool.
See you guys.
Thanks a lot.
Bye, see you later.
See you.
That's great. How did I get Chris? I don't know how I got Chris. I'm dreaming. I'm in a weird world. So it sounds like there's a cut version in Melbourne as well. So,
excellent.
Excellent.
So, good for us. We got to see the uncut version.
So maybe that's why we liked it more. I don't know. All right, let's move on to some news because we're running long again, as always, whenever we have a third person in the room. Actually, we run long on this show even without a third person. All right, let's move into news and basically say it's not your fault. David Fincher is directing the American remake of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, as we know. And the first teaser came out this week. Now, we'll preface this by saying that a Red Band teaser trailer leaked, quote unquote, onto the internet. And it was really quite literally a camera filming in a studio, in a cinema. And it was on the internet for a couple of days and then disappeared. And you can actually still find it if you do some searching through YouTube. But then the official Green Band trailer came out, which is identical except it's missing a few of the fleshier bits. Because apparently Mara, what's her name? Mara something, the girl playing?
Rooney Mara.
Thank you. Yep. Rooney Mara is actually apparently naked a lot in this movie. So
she's naked on the poster.
Well, that's the poster they're saying probably won't get approved, which is her naked from the waist up. So it's all looking pretty good at this point. But I will say that the teaser is actually really interestingly cut because we never actually hear anybody talk. So our audio podcast, I do apologize, you're just going to hear music.
But it's good music.
It's good music, and it's really fast cutting. And if you get a chance, go and have a look at this trailer because it is really interesting for those in particular who have seen the original Swedish film because there's a lot of similarities in there. Mm-hmm. You're going to sit there watching this and you're going to go, I know that, I know that, I know that. So he's looked at that. The other thing that we're not hearing, though, is apparently they're all doing Swedish accents. So
really?
Yeah, I read that a while ago, and I really hope that's not true.
That's a bit on the nose if it's
but
true.
But it's shot in Sweden, and apparently they are doing Swedish accents. So that we don't hear that aspect of it, though. So here's the trailer. Have a look at this, and then we'll have a little talk. Music starts to distort out at the end like that. It's really cool.
That's a very, very risky thing to do.
So I'm curious about this. So
yeah,
I'm not a huge fan of the original film.
No, nor am I.
And I am very curious to see what Fincher does with it now. And it doesn't look like he's pulling any punches on this thing.
No, look, I mean, it looks like it's got the look of, say, Zodiac or Seven.
Yeah.
Well, you've got what's his name, Jeff Cronenworth as the standard
the
team.
DLP, so
yeah. Yeah.
On the cameras, and I mean, like, after having a chat with him about the film, he seems really, really confident in the way it's shot, and I mean, like, they know how to do that kind of a sound, so, you know, kind of a look. Is, so, I mean, like, dark and gritty and kind of almost, I don't know, Vaseline over
yeah.
it, kind of a look.
Slightly
that they
dirty.
Do.
Everything
like, yeah,
looks dirty.
It's
is he
really
going to do a
sticky
tilt
dirty?
Sequence? That's what I want to
know. Is he going to do what?
A tilt shift sequence like, yeah. the, like the yacht race.
Yeah, but speaking of sounds, I mean, look, Trent Reznor's back, and it's no secret I wasn't the biggest fan of The Social Network. And
get out of my studio.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I thought it was a good film. I just didn't think it was the greatest film of the year. I wasn't falling over myself to praise it. But
that's fair. I know. Yeah. I know a lot of people who
and,
feel that way.
But I'd say I enjoyed it. I thought yeah. it was a good film. I didn't think it was a great film. But the soundtrack to that was absolutely brilliant. I mean, like, I'm a massive Nine Inch Nails fan anyway. But Trent Reznor attached to anything gets a big tick. I mean, as you heard in that trailer, it's Led Zeppelin covered by Karen O from the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, produced by Trent Reznor. It sold me on that.
So. It's like a win.
Yeah.
It's a win-win all around. So we're very, very curious. I love the caption, the Feel Bad Film of Christmas. I think that is
that's
wonderful.
That's so good that and is so true.
Just terrific. So we'll see what happens. I think Fincher is an amazing director. He's come such a long way from his start.
Yeah. No, agreed.
And now it's funny, from a director who I said I will never see one of his films again
yeah.
to a director who is now the must-see director
absolutely.
Is sure. a remarkable effort.
Absolutely.
So, okay. Now, I don't even know what. Josh, do you want to lead this one? This is
David O. Russell. The happiest part of my week.
Yeah,
actually,
absolutely.
When I found this, David O. Russell has left Uncharted.
Yeah.
It makes so many people so happy. This is the man who came out saying he just from the start just showed no support or care for anything we wanted. It was like he comes out, he's like, I'm going to do the Uncharted film, but I'm not going to have it anything like the games. Instead, I'm going to make it a movie for my kids. And I'm just sitting there going, who said I don't care about your kids? And like then he's like, and I'm not going to follow the general story. I'm going to make it a true drama about three family members. And I'm just sitting there going, who? What? Heh. And he's like, you know what? And I'm going to run with Mark Wahlberg. And I'm just like, you are disgusting. And I just instantly became violently ill.
And this is a man who we are fans of. I mean, David O. Russell has made some really good films.
Absolutely.
But this is not his film.
Was he going to keep the name Uncharted?
And I mean, like, I think he probably went into that office, and I reckon this is where the creative differences problem. He came in and he was like, you know what? I don't like the name Uncharted. I'm going to go with something else. And they're like, right, it's about time you left, man.
Well, and the news got even better because after O. Russell left, it looks like Wahlberg has also walked from the project because Wahlberg is actually involved in O. Russell's other film that he's working on. Mm. And there was speculation, well, does this mean David O. Russell's script will be handled by somebody else? Mm. But no, he's taken the script with him too.
Oh, he's packed up his toys and gone
he's
home.
He's taken his ball and bat and gone home. Absolutely. No, apparently they're ditching the script and they're going back to an earlier draft that was written by somebody else, and they're hired some new writers to come on and rewrite it again.
Yeah.
And they're going back to the original idea of a lone explorer and the whole family dynamic. The whole Robert De Niro, Joe Pesci thing seems to have been pushed off into the background, so thank God for that. And we are finally going to, as somebody said, can we start the campaign to get Nathan Fillion on board?
Oh, absolutely.
Again?
It's just come up on the chat room here. Matthew Vaughn to direct, Fillion to star.
There's a film for you.
Look, honestly, I mean, people have said that Fillion's too old, but I don't really mind. I think that he's the kind of person that will fill the screen with charisma more than anything, and that's why we've always believed that he was the guy for the role, because he just has the same sense of humor.
Yeah, absolutely.
He just has that. He's got the big action thing, and he also plays that line. And I mean, like, you know, you can forgive me for kind of typecasting him, but Nathan Fillion is the one kind of guy, and he does it so well. And I mean, like, there are a lot of actors that can pull this kind of thing off, but Fillion has that ability to play that really good line between a really likable character that's on the wrong side of the law. And that's exactly what this role is about. And, I really hope that this actually comes
Digital
about.
Digital Angel says she wants Nathan Fillion's babies.
I think we all do, dude. We're not alone with that one. But yeah.
More to the point, Fillion deserves it.
Yes. I mean, absolutely. You know, he's been driving for this role. We need to give him something on the main screen.
Absolutely.
Not TV, not like Serenity, the movie of Firefly or anything like this. I want him to get a freaking good movie just on its own.
Damn
it's
straight.
Just a good movie.
Absolutely.
And
damn
that's
straight.
This is what this
we
is.
We want him to be a movie star, goddammit. We want him to be a movie star.
Yeah.
What we don't want to be a movie star is sharks. Well, no, actually we do. But that's beside the point. Couldn't think of any other way to segue.
Oh, yes. I'm so
now,
happy.
Now, last week we talked about the director of Snakes on a Plane, David R. Ellis, and we talked about his new film, I put it out of my mind now, Shark Night. That's
Shark
the
Night.
One.
3D.
Shark Night 3D. Piranha. Yeah. You know, get that one.
Piranha Day.
Piranha Day. And we just found out this week that an Australian film may have actually gazumped him, because Russell Mulcahy, director of Highlander and...
There can be only one.
Thank you very much. There had to be somebody throwing that out. And Razorback has decided to do Sharks in a Supermarket, which I think is just brilliant. Oh, sorry. That's not the title.
Sorry.
That's not the title. That's not the title.
Let's give it its proper title.
Bait in 3D.
Wait, so Bait's in 3D?
Bait's in 3D.
So just keep learning.
It's getting
stuff
better by
stuff.
The minute. Now, what we found out was this is a $20 million Australian film set in Queensland, and they even go so far as on the trailer that you're about to see come up at the beginning with Queensland beautiful one day, beautiful the next.
Sharky the next.
Basically, the story is about, the most ludicrous concept, Julian McMahon stars in it, by the way, most ludicrous concept in the world, a giant tsunami waves in, and as my beautiful wife suddenly turned around and went, tsunamis don't work that way, but, you know, she's a scientist, what can I tell you? But a giant tsunami washes in on the coast of Queensland, flooding a supermarket, trapping the people in the supermarket, and also washing in a group of tiger sharks. Come on! What's not to like about this?
I think it's fantastic. Stand by. How can you possibly have a problem with
this? Stand by for one of the most stupid-looking films you've ever seen.
Amazing-looking
film. Here's the trailer. Now, I will point out that we put this trailer up on the site, and it got pulled. This is not supposed to. This is not supposed to be out there. I don't think this was final, and the quality is not great. But I found another copy. Here is the trailer for Bait 3D, or as I like to call it, Sharks in the Supermarket. Sharks growl? That's what I want to know.
Oh, man, I wish Brilliant. That. I really wish that film was going to be better than it actually is.
I like the fact that somebody said they could have at least made it a great white shark. I don't think the great white shark would have fit down the aisle.
No.
Remember, it is a supermarket, dude. So
we've got to clean up in aisle 12.
Sorry?
We've got to clean up in aisle 12.
And Delta Knight in our chat room says, oh, come on, no one would hold up a place in Queensland.
Exactly. That's why no one's going to believe this.
I can just imagine that this film is going to disappear into the same place that the old Australian film Dark Age resides in. Does anybody know whatever happened to that movie?
No. Nope.
This is the film about the giant crocodile.
Lest we forget, this is Russell Mulcahy. He didn't only do Highlander, he did Razorback.
I quite enjoyed Razorback for its stupidness. But in its day, I remember we all... the one thing I remember about Razorback is it's so stylishly made. The other problem is that Russell Mulcahy doesn't direct like that anymore.
No.
He doesn't have that music video eye anymore.
No, it's a shame. Like, he used to do those great transitions. Like, I mean, in Highlander, there's that great moment in the opening sequence where they just had the fight in the car lot, and it pans up, and suddenly
the water pans,
and then you
the one in the fish tank where it pans across the fish tank and the top of the water, and as it comes to the top of the water, the castle's at the top, and we actually pass through the
oh, like, it's brilliant,
very cleverly done.
He hasn't done that in years.
No, he hasn't. Ever since he stopped directing Duran Duran videos, so you know, it's like.
Well, Duran Duran are making a comeback, so maybe he will too.
Well, his comeback film is obviously Sharks in the Supermarket.
Wow, there you go.
Two of the signs of the apocalypse.
Oh, dear. All right. So we also got some news this week about The Hobbit. It actually picked up names, and it picked up dates. For those who don't know, The Hobbit is actually been split into two films. Now, this is where it actually confuses me a little bit, because originally what we had been told was that they wanted two films, and so Jackson came up with the idea of doing one film of The Hobbit and then doing a second film, which was a bridge between The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, based on the appendices and all this sort of stuff. Like, he's basically creating an original piece, right? Now it looks like it's gone to them splitting The Hobbit into two films. So I'm not sure exactly what's going on here. We'll find out more. $500 million is being spent on these two films. it is being released next year at Christmas time, and then the following film will be 2013, so we actually have dates. And the films are going to be called The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey, which will be the first one, December 14th, 2012. The second will be called The Hobbit, There and Back Again, which is actually the name of the book.
The Hobbit, yeah.
So There and Back Again, and that will hit December 13th, 2013. Mm-hmm. We also got wind this week that Orlando Bloom has been cast. He's coming back as Legolas. Now, Legolas isn't in the book.
No.
So I'm very curious how they're fitting that
in. Which probably gives weight to that sort of bridging story.
Which is what I think, because a bunch of original cast members from Lord of the Rings have been cast, and these are all characters that do not appear in The Hobbit.
There's been some great casting news in the last few weeks, though. You've probably spoken about this on previous shows.
Kind of on and off. We kind of, with The Hobbit, we kind of go on and off. What have you heard?
Stephen Fry.
I heard that one. Fantastic. Yeah, yes.
Just good. Him and anything.
Totally happy with that.
Yeah, he's the head of a town that they go to. I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to The Hobbit. Josh and I have talked about this many times over the past month, and Josh expressed one concern, which of course was this is a film that Peter Jackson didn't actually want to direct, so bringing him, like forcing him into the director's chair might work against them, you know?
Yes and no. I think half the reason all these other directors didn't work out is that the Lord of the Rings films have become so indelibly associated with Peter Jackson. And taking him out of the equation, he was always on as producer, but taking him out of the equation never felt right to me. And I really didn't.
No,
you know. And
I agree.
And it's like all these disasters were kind of fated in a way to just bring him back to the table and go, well, right, if you're going to do it right, you have to do it yourself, rolling up your sleeves and heading back to...
Does this mean he can't direct the second Tintin film, which was the original plan?
Because
he's going to be working on The Hobbit for an awful long time now. So,
well, you know, maybe he doesn't need to.
Yeah.
Well, look, I mean, if the first one hits as strongly as we think it is, like even if we do maybe have Spielberg do another one or perhaps a different director do two and then him come in for three, it's like the great thing about Tintin, and we've talked about this before, is they are all different feelings.
Because
every single comic is set in a different place with a different kind of world around him, and you've just got these rotating characters that are in that world, in that situation. And that's why I'm not worried about that at all, because if he has to wait for a while, then cool. He'll still be there and he'll still make it work.
I think someone just said on the chat room there said it better than any of us. He respects the series so much, he'll do a good job directing. And
regardless.
Really going to try, and that is one thing that I'm happy with.
And let's face it, his entire company and everything is really built around this series of films. So it's like this is like prime material for all. And it'll be great to have Richard... what's his name again? The really thick New Zealand guy. Richard Taylor. Come back in and do all the production design because he is amazing at this. So
It'll look a treat.
It will look a treat. That's very true. Somebody said in our chat room, Callison says Legolas could be kinda. He was a Mirkwood elf, so he could be in the background of the Mirkwood scenes. We had that talk the other night. My wife and I were actually, we're both big Lord of the Rings fans. I don't remember them ever referring to Legolas as a Mirkwood elf, because that was my first thought, was maybe he's a wood elf, you know what I mean? But I'm not sure if he is actually from that.
Because they were much darker just there at the time. So,
I don't know. We don't know. He could have a much better knowledge of the books than me, so he could very well be a Mirkwood elf. So we'll see. I'm glad that we're finally getting some information. There's a stellar photograph released. If you Google search it, you can find it, which is Ian McKellen, full Gandalf makeup, watching a take on the 3D monitors. And so it's Gandalf with the 3D glasses on.
Yes,
it is a killer photo. You have to see it. Because he's got such a serious look on his face, too, watching the scene with these big, thick black Ray-Bans on, you know? So it's quality stuff. All right, so what else we got here? Oh, we got another trailer. This one, what were your opinions, Richard, when the first Rise of the Planet of the Apes trailer came out?
No, actually, I'm really looking forward to this because I was so let down by it, like everybody else, with Burton's version, and that was a high five for the audio listeners. A really awkward high five too.
It's kind of
high five gently.
Yeah.
It was. Burton and Planet of the Apes, I thought was going to be a great fit, but wasn't. The look of this has really got me intrigued. I didn't think it was necessary. I didn't think we needed to go back into that world again.
Look, I think it's completely unnecessary.
Have you guys read the original book?
No.
And it's got a much more grounded feeling to it, and it doesn't sort of do this backstory thing as well. But I really liked in the original Planet of the Apes series. I think it was the fourth and fifth films.
Escape and Conquest.
Yeah. When they actually did the kind of stuff on Earth prior to the Planet of the Apes. And I really liked that story. I kind of got sucked into it, but obviously the men in ape costumes just kind of let it down because the budget.
And then it all fell apart because battle seemed to have nothing to do with it. So
yeah, and the budget was so low by that stage. So this might bring it back. But
okay, so basically when the first trailer came out, Josh and I went, "Oh God, are we really doing this?" And then we saw the trailer and we went, "Hey, we're down for that."
Yeah,
that actually looks kind of dark and sinister, and it looks kind of interesting. Well, a second trailer came out this week.
Excellent. I don't even know if I've seen this yet.
And I got to tell you, I like this even more now. So have a look at this, because this is actually pretty good.
We're talking about huge potential for millions of people.
Our therapy enables the brain to repair itself.
We call it
the cure.
I want you to start testing on chimps ASAP.
We test one subject. I want to make sure it's stable.
I designed the 112 for repair, but Caesar's gone way beyond that.
You mean increased intelligence?
The skills that far exceed that of a human counterpart.
This is wrong, Will.
It works.
And what about Caesar? Where does he fit in?
That ship's company property.
He hasn't spent any time with other chimps.
They're not people, you know.
Are you trying to control things that are not meant to be controlled?
They are contaminated. Put those apes down.
You have no idea what you're dealing with.
So down with that.
Awesome.
Monkeys are cool.
Monkeys are cool. The work that Weta has done on this is phenomenal. They've got such expression to them.
Just the eyes in there.
No uncanny valley here.
No. And that's the freaky thing, I think. There's no men in monkey suits at all.
No. It's all CG.
That's the thing. You can take this film seriously. And that's the difference between that and Burton's, is Burton's was just ridiculous. It was like...
And that being said, I mean, Burton's had probably was sporting some of the best makeup work
of
the day.
I think the makeup work in Burton's one was the best thing.
I think the biggest problem with Burton's one was the script. I mean, I mean that's really what it comes down to. Burton's, I mean, even the design of it, I was okay with that film. I just hated the script.
Interesting fact, though, Helena Bonham Carter was not in makeup for that film. Fact.
Oh, that's mean. That's just mean.
Oh, disagree with me. Challenge you.
All right, I've got a curiosity here, and this is not really because of I don't know much about the product, so I can't really even tell you what the product is really about. It's a curiosity, and I just want a question answered for this one, which is Paramount Pictures has just acquired. Oh, by the way, did I tell you that we met J.J. Abrams the other day? Speaking of Paramount, now Paramount Pictures has acquired the DC Comics The Mighty to turn into a film.
Mighty.
Now, I don't even care about The Mighty. I can give you a synopsis of it. They've got a synopsis here and so forth, but that's not the issue here. Let me just state it again. Paramount Pictures has acquired the motion picture rights to DC Comics' The Mighty. Isn't DC owned by Warner Brothers?
Yes.
Why isn't Warner Brothers making The Mighty?
Well, maybe because they want this because it looks like a cool film. I don't care. What's the comic about?
Okay, it says...
Marty tells the story of Alpha One.
Alpha One, the world's most powerful super being, who has always been a force for good, but Gabriel Cole, a cop whose life was saved by Alpha One as a child, has uncovered his hero's dark plan that will put them all on a collision course of an ordinary man versus a Superman. Anyway, so that's basically it.
Could be cool.
It could be cool. Look, I think that we could have a very interesting... I'm going to have to seek out The Mighty now and read it to see what it's actually about.
Hell yeah. Cool.
And all that sort of stuff. I don't understand Warner Brothers' strategy with their DC comics at the moment. I don't understand it.
It's pretty clear. They looked at Superman Returns and said, clearly we don't know what we're doing. They had a look at what Paramount's doing at the moment and said, you know what? Let them do it. We'll still get some cash off
you
this.
Guys are pretty cool. Yeah. I just don't look. They did. We had this press statement. Remember, we read the press statement. There was a press statement almost a year ago where they said Warner Bros. was staging the entire DC Comics productions, and they were going to line up all this new DC comic. And they were copying Marvel's model.
Yep.
And so all this DC products is going to start rolling out. None of it has happened. You know.
And even the comics division, it was just announced this week that they're having another major crisis in the comics world and renumbering, putting every single comic, all 52 comics, whatever it is, back to number one. Wow. And obviously they're just stumbling around at the dark, throwing darts, hoping it'll hit something.
I don't know what they're doing.
And I should state for the record, I'm a massive DC Comics fan.
And I will say for the record, I'm actually reading the current run of Green Lantern at the moment. Green Arrow at the moment.
Green Arrow.
The ones where Star City's collapsed and he's in the forest. And the forest is magically grown out of... This is actually a really good comic. I want to see this turn into a film.
For those of you who don't know, I'm a Green Arrow nut. I've got everything pretty much going back to the 60s. So, I'm hardcore geek on Green Arrow.
So this is the Brightest Day run.
It's pretty good. Some good writing lately.
Yeah, no, it's good stuff. So I'm enjoying that. All I could think is... Warner Brothers really has no idea what they're doing right now. They actually are sitting on a stable of some of the most popular heroes and comic books on the market. They have a fully fledged production company ready to go, and they can't even get their own shit off the ground.
I think Julian's given us the answer in the chat room. It's the creators own the rights to the comic, not DC, and that's why it's gone to Paramount. So it's a creator-owned comic. Yeah.
And that also came up this week. It's not in their show notes, but 2013, it looks like Superman's going to be split in two. The Schuster and Siegel families are going to basically get the rights back to their stuff, and Warner DC will own the rights to the other half. So things like Leaping, the costume, and a couple of other things, his origin, I think it is, will go back to the Siegel family, but Warner's will maintain the rights to elements that they added to it later. So you're looking at, this is a disaster. Superman has just bit the big one. Because of a rights issue.
This is like Thunderball. Wow. Maybe they'll make the Thunderball of the Never Say Never Again.
Yeah, but this
Superman
is also,
comic.
From what I understand, this is also in comics.
Right.
So this is
in comics as
this
well.
This is like a full-fledged split down the middle.
Maybe this is why Supes has given up his American citizenship. Maybe.
So I don't know what's going on. Superman it's a disaster waiting to happen. 2013, Superman, if they can't buy them out or resolve rights on this, it's going... It's going to die. I mean, the Superman comic book is literally, they're not going to be able to do anything with it, you know?
It's exactly what Superman Tony's going, your legal system has failed me. I'm moving to Canada.
All right, speaking of comic books, the last piece of news we have today is Isaiah Mustafa. For those who don't remember who Isaiah Mustafa is, this is him.
Hello, ladies. Look at your man. Now back to me. Now back at your man. Now back to me. Sadly, he isn't me. But if he stopped using lady-scented body wash and switched to Old Spice, he could smell like he's me. Look down. Back up. Where are you? You're on a boat with the man your man could smell it. What's in your hand? Back at me. I have it. It's an oyster with two tickets to that thing
you love.
I love
this ad.
Look at it. The tickets are now diamonds. It's just literally anything is possible when your man smells like Old Spice and not a lady. I'm on a horse.
Okay, so that's Isaiah Mustafa, and he recently was seen in Chuck. He's had a small recurring role in the last season of Chuck, and he was quite funny in that. He wants to play Marvel Comics Luke Cage. He wants to play it real bad. He's been out there lobbying to play this character, and a very curious video turned up. And some are now saying that they think that Isaiah Mustafa may have actually paid for it. And this is it. So have a look at this. It's quite short. This video turned up online and everybody's saying, oh, okay.
Hey, look.
What a curious little video, though.
It looks all right. I mean, he's... I don't want to be mean about this.
He's
not... Yeah, he's not big enough. Like, even if he...
That's what we've heard.
And we're not talking about his package here, Richard.
Right. He seems very comfortable with himself. Yeah. No, but, like, he's not wide enough. Like, Luke Cage is a human.
I mean, this is... he's a human... Brick house, you know? He's a very big, powerful guy. I mean, it's the guy who in the 70s, I mean, he's progressed a lot since then, but in the 70s, used to wear that huge full chain around his waist. It was like a boat chain, you know?
Yeah.
This is a big guy.
They did some really good stuff with him in the comics a few years ago. Marvel launched, I don't even know if the line's still running, Marvel Max, which was their mature readers line.
Oh, yeah.
And they launched it with a series called Alias, which had nothing to do with J.J. Abrams.
Did I tell
Alias.
You I met him this week?
It's funny enough, I met J.J. Abrams
too. This is just going to keep happening.
You saw my segue coming from a mile off there.
I did.
But the series called Alias was really good because it was about this superhero who was kind of like a second run superhero back in the 70s or 80s or something. And they get made her a detective. And Luke Cage was like friends with her in this. And they made him really dark and a bit self-interested. And then he got his own Marvel Max series out of that. And he became a character I was interested in.
And Josh was saying, his appearances in the Civil War series in Marvel were fantastic. You know, he's become a very deep character, is what he's
exactly.
Become.
He was the character that I just really related to. Like, he just all of a sudden got this huge amount of respect from me just because of his plan throughout the series and what he was doing and his reasons for doing it. It was like, this is a character that should be expanded on.
So our chat room has actually come alive on this one. Basically, Digital Angel said, how can anyone take him seriously after the Old Spice guy? Sweet Pea in our chat room has said, exactly, he's just a cheesy guy. And that's the problem. When he makes his appearance in Chuck, you start chuckling because you go, oh, it's the Old Spice guy, you know?
Yeah.
And it worries me a little bit that the Old Spice guy, who is a great character and it's a great fun campaign, has forever locked him into that, though, you know?
No, but the question is, like, even if you could, like, make him a serious character, it's just, this doesn't sell me on him being Luke Cage.
No.
It's
and do you know who was originally attached to play Luke Cage? Was Wesley Snipes. Now, Wesley Snipes can't do it because he's in jail right now, so,
there's that.
He's in jail
that
for the next couple of years, so he's
Well, I think it's method acting, because I think Luke Cage was an ex-con.
That's true. So maybe we should leave it for a couple of years and then bring him out. Although, I think, personally, Wesley Snipes should play Black Panther.
Yes.
That's the role he was born to play.
Well, even him actually playing Black Panther,
he could do Black
I'd
Panther,
be
yeah.
much more happy with him playing Black Panther than Luke Cage. Like, Luke Cage, you need, like, Rampage Jackson or somebody with acting talent. Not that he has.
Digital Angel says, people will spend the duration of a serious movie giggling. And the problem is, I mean, once again, we come down to this typecasting issue. It is a situation where he may need to give some distance to his career before he tries to be taken seriously.
I agree.
I think it's too close to the Old Spice ads at this point. He needs to keep doing stuff like Chuck and stuff like that where he's not taken too seriously, but he's not just doing Old Spice guy.
Absolutely. Yep.
Just build some distance between him and that campaign, then he might be taken seriously again. But at the moment, he is too close.
Sure.
Everybody knows I'm on a horse. And every time he says something, they're going to go, and I'm on a horse.
They just have Luke Cage on a horse.
Yeah, he's going to walk out and he's going to go, hello, ladies. And everybody's going to flip, you know? So anyway.
Everybody will start cheering.
Now, the other thing I was thinking was, that's a very odd little piece of video. That video obviously is for me, but could it be another Mortal Kombat situation where they're making a web series or something out of this?
Yeah.
Could be.
I'm just wondering where this is
going. Oh, God, I hope so. I love that shit.
That would be a more interesting...
That would be nice.
That would be an interesting project. Yeah. I'd be keen on that. All right, let's move out of news. Let's move into the list of five. This week in our list of five, we've got five political films. Listener Matt from last week's show suggested this list, and considering the slightly political nature of X-Men First Class, we're going to go on this.
That's a reach there, David.
Oh, I've written here. I even put it in italics. I wasn't going to say it, but I put it in italics. I said, don't judge me. I'm trying to make a connection here. So, Matt, this list is for you. And we'll actually run in a better order this week, because last week we were kind of getting confused over who was doing what. So why don't I start off this week and we'll move that way, okay? So we'll go. My number five on this list is Bob Roberts, the Tim Robbins film from 1992, pseudo-documentary style about a whack job Republican folk singer who basically is running his campaign and, of course, is completely corrupt but is trying to win everybody over with his charm. Funny-ass film. Well worth having a look at if you haven't seen it. Josh, your number five.
My number five is Bullworth.
I love Bullworth!
Bullworth is a great film. If you haven't seen it, it is Warren Beatty actually decides that he wants to be bluntly honest and speak with kind of a hip-hop culture
down
and
with
music
the kids
thing. And it's just, it's so ridiculous, so stupid, and fucking funny as shit.
It is. It's
and
a great
it
film.
It was great. I love that film.
My favorite part about that film was the music video that went with it. I want to say Dirty Old Bastard. It's Old Dirty Bastard, isn't it?
Yeah.
The guy. And there's a line in that song, which is, my eyes are sore from being a senator. Favorite hip-hop line ever.
Oh.
Fantastic. Richard, your number five.
My number five is, and this is the strength of my list, this is number five, All the President's Men.
Much higher on my list.
Yeah,
so I'm curious to
it
see
it started
where
out at number one, but I just it, things have come along. Those of you who don't know it, based on the Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein book, and you might mention this later, two journalists investigating Watergate scandal, doing something that doesn't happen today, real journalism. And,
absolutely.
It's also a great little thriller as well.
It's a fantastic film. Alan J. Pakula directed it, and it's written by one of my favorite screenwriters of all time, which is William Goldman, which I'll talk a little bit about later on because there's been some controversy over that. So yes. I'll come back to that when I talk about it. It is much higher on my list. So save your comments. When it comes back up again,
okay,
we'll jump in on this, okay? Okay. All right, my number four is Wag the Dog, the Barry Levinson film from 1998, basically about faking a war, which is just terrific stuff. Robert De Niro and Dustin Hoffman, and terrific film. If you haven't seen it, this is political satire at its best. It really is. It digs, and it was right around the time of starting wars in the Middle East and stuff, and you could sit there and going, oh, this just rings way too true.
Yeah.
All right, your number four, Josh.
It's political as much as political can get for me, because I'm not a huge political thriller kind of a thing, but The Pelican Brief, which was kind of conspiracy.
That's out of
in,
left field, yeah. But
yeah,
good.
Exactly. As a film, it's not that great, but it was one of my first memories of Denzel Washington.
That's fair.
And one of the only films I actually like Julia Robertson. She doesn't annoy me in that.
That's true. I mean, you're not a big Julia Roberts fan.
Again, it's more about conspiracy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it does go into kind of political trains and
as
stuff
most
like that.
Of them do, actually.
Exactly.
It's actually a fairly wide open field when you start
funnily
looking.
Funnily enough, the screenplay done by the same director and screenplay done by the same director as your one.
Alan J. Pakula.
Exactly. So, yeah, the man knew how to handle that sort of stuff. And again, you go back to it now, stuff like this doesn't date that well, but it's sort of, you
well,
can still
a lot
keep
of
the
political
tension
films are really about their moment in time as well.
But
so.
The tension always remains strong for me.
That's
and
true.
That's the thing. Yeah. Anyway.
Number four.
For me, it was Nashville. Robert Altman.
Wow,
film.
That's out of left field.
Yeah.
But that's true. That is actually very political, isn't
it's,
it?
It's on the surface. It's a movie about the country and Western business. But there's this really dodgy political campaign going throughout it. I put down a quote from the New Statesman on this, which was a 2.5-hour epic. It was a state of nation address to the United States as the country approached its 200th birthday. Mm-hmm. And it really is. This is Robert Altman at his best.
It is. And it's really hard to get.
It is hard to get.
It is really hard to get. And if anybody can tell me where I can grab hold of a really good copy of this, I would be really pleased, because I've been looking for it for a long time.
It's been a while since I've seen it, and I think it might have been on VHS.
Our American listeners are going, it's really easy to get. In Australia, it is really hard to get. It is hasn't been released on home video since VHS.
No.
So I'm really looking for this film. because I haven't seen it in better part of 2 decades. Yeah. So I would really like to see it again.
I mean, we could import the DVD, but that would be too easy.
Yeah, but you know, that requires getting up there and putting the credit card down and all that crap. Well, maybe we're going to have to do this, though. I think we're going to have to do this. All right. My number three is Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, 1939 Frank Capra film.
It's my number two.
Oh, there you go. This is just James Stewart.
Well, it's a pretty good film. I'll explain it to you. Shut up for a minute.
I didn't know you could do that.
Well, that's awesome.
I put it on my list just so I could do Jimmy Stewart.
I put it on my list because it's a great film. And the
well, it's a fine film.
For those who don't know, it's about an idealistic
Mr. Potter. Someone of
All right, we had enough Jimmy Stewart now. All right,
somebody asked me to do that. Sorry.
Well, there you go. How much do you get paid for doing that? What's the bet? It is about an idealistic young congressman or senator. I can never remember.
I think it was Congress.
Where basically he learns about how corrupt it can all be, and then to make his point, sets up the almighty filibuster of all filibusters, and just stays talking for the second half of the film, which is an amazing sequence. It really is a good film. We actually watched it again. It was on Fox till just the other night, and Katie had never seen it, and I said, "Watch, just watch." This is James Stewart and Frank Capra, who is a favorite of mine, at the height of their abilities. Really good stuff. Your number three, Josh.
My number three is The Manchurian Candidate, the new version.
Great film.
Not the old one, because I haven't seen it.
Take back what I just said.
Yeah. You didn't like?
Not compared with the original.
No, I didn't mind the new one, but if you compare it to the original,
you can only go with what you've got.
Absolutely.
Exactly. And look, I'm sure the original was probably better, but I'm not going to be one of those people that just goes with it because apparently it was better. I actually really enjoyed the new one.
The new one's actually not a bad film. It's not a bad film. I liked it. But as I say, if I was on my list, which it isn't because I completely forgot about it, if it was on my list, I would have put the original. But that's because I've seen the original. So.
Yeah.
That's one of those situations. But it's not on my list. So I give it back to you and give you full credit because that is a great film and I should have remembered it. I can't believe I forgot it. That's the problem with doing these lists on a Friday night. Okay. I was tired. Did I tell you about J.J. Abrams?
How many times?
Hey, I met J.J. Abrams and I still mentioned the list.
Did you meet him too?
I did. And you were there. And you were there.
All right. Shut up already. Next.
All right, you are number... Where are we up to? No, Richard, you're number three.
It's my bit of paper here. You guys might not know this, but I consider my... Oh, hang on, wait.
Stay focused. Familiar. My God, sorry. It's already late.
It's JFK is my number three.
Great film. Yes, great film.
Look, I've just written... I had a really brief note for this. Editing, story, acting, pacing. It's all there.
It's all there.
It really is.
And probably the last really great Oliver Stone film.
Probably.
Yeah, I think it's probably the end of the Oliver Stone era. Terrific stuff. Really good. And actually, one of the strange thing for me to even say, one of the finest performances from Kevin Costner's career.
Yeah. I'm a massive Kevin Costner fan.
Get out of my studio.
No, I really like him because of his persistent love for the Western, and he kept it alive through the wilderness years.
Actually, I'm just going to take the very first part of that and say the reason he has a career is because he's persistent.
Yeah. Okay. He keeps turning up.
He keeps turning up and they keep going, well, you're here, you might as well be in the movie.
No, but you're right. It's probably the best performance of his career as well. Everything in that film is damn near perfect.
That is a brilliant film. Yeah. All right. My number two is a 1949 film by Robert Rosen called All the King's Men. Now, All the King's Men is about a hick who basically runs for politics, becomes like the hero of everybody, and then, of course, ultimately tells about how, with ultimate power, comes ultimate corruption, and how this once jovial hick who basically everybody thought this is going to be the future basically just becomes everything that he originally despised and was running against in the first place. A masterful, powerful film. All the King's Men is well worth watching. Do not watch the remake. No. That was made with Sean Penn a couple of years ago. It is not worth it compared to the original 49 version. Your number two, Josh.
My number two is Fair Game, which watched recently with you at the preview screening, and it's been a long time since I could sit in a room and watch a film which was actually about politics, real politics, and not flinch or turn away at all.
I liked Fair Game a lot.
Like, Fair Game was such a solid little movie, and it just... It everybody was on top acting game, and the story is incredibly interesting, and it's like you look at all this stuff, and I walked out at the end of it, and I'm like, wow, I didn't think you could actually get me to sit down and actually, you know, sort of listen for that long. But they did, and so it goes high on my list.
Yeah, no, I thought it was a terrific film. Did you see Fair Game?
I did, actually. I've got to say, I wasn't the biggest fan of it. I didn't dislike it, but I don't know, it was missing something for me.
Do you know what it was for me? It actually had an ending, and Doug Liman doesn't know how to end films. Yeah. And so for me, it was like Doug Liman actually made a film that ended and actually had a proper story.
I think it would have been a great film if it had dropped about 5-6 years earlier. And
It
would have had more impact for me, I think, because it's one of those things that the U.S. Is really good at doing in terms of political films. And this is sort of distinct from some of the other ones we've talked about, is dropping them after the fact and then commenting. And I think if it had been contemporary with the events, it probably would have ended up being a television movie if it had been contemporary with events. Look, not knocking it. It was still, as you said,
I thought it was a fairly solid film. I actually really gave it a good
great performances and all sorts of things. So.
Sean Penn, fantastic in always that film. Always good. Really good in that film. All right, your number two.
My number two, as I mentioned already, was Mrs. Smith Goes to Washington. I'll just throw in a couple of extra facts while I'm here. I like it because it's that kind of extension of Frank Capra. I really like that kind of idealized Americana that Frank Capra does.
I'm a huge Frank Capra fan.
And, It's a Wonderful Life is, wonderful.
It's actually one of my favorite films of all time.
Absolutely. So. And it's that whole thing, that one man can make a difference thing. I love that. I love how America loves itself like that. And that's
used to
love itself. And that's the America that they want to be.
Yeah.
And Frank Capra understood that. But it was actually interesting. When I was looking this up yesterday, apparently several politicians yelled or walked out of screenings saying that because it was a really bad depiction of Congress
It's actually pretty accurate from the Congress
I've
seen.
Well, this is the thing, and they hated it at the time. And it was really interesting that it was banned or dubbed in several European countries to fit in with the official ideology of whichever country it was in. And if you look this up on Wiki or Internet Movie Database, they've got it in the same sort of trivia section. It lists which countries it was altered in. I thought that was really interesting. Now considered to be a classic, of course, almost universally. Yeah. But I thought that was really
interesting. And that's the power of a film. If a film can actually upset people that much, you know it's doing its job right. You know, that's the thing. It's a great film. It's also quite funny in places. It's charming. It's got a lot of heart to it. Frank Capra is the one thing you cannot knock Frank Capra for. You can't say the man doesn't have heart. Man puts his all into everything. It's a really good film. And it was recently remade, wasn't it?
A couple of his films have been remade. I know Mr. Deeds Goes to Town was remade.
I'm thinking of Mr. Deeds Goes to Town. That's right, Adam Sandler.
In other words, Mr. Deeds.
Avoid. Avoid. All right, so that's your number two, yeah? All right, we're on the one tracks here. My number one is All the President's Men, 1976 Alan J. Pakula film. Now, there was controversy that came up, and it's bizarre, because William Goldman, who is a fantastic writer and has actually got one of the definitive books on Hollywood, if you ever want to read it, called Adventures in the Screen Trade, which is just a fantastic book. He was asked to come in and adapt the book into a screenplay, which he did. Apparently, Robert Redford had a lot of problems with his adaptation, and he hired writers to come in and rewrite the script, and there was all this controversy. Robert Redford recently, in his biography, came out and said, William Goldman's script, he won an Oscar for it, but it's a joke because none of his script is in the film. Mm-hmm. And he basically said there's only about 5% of his writing actually in the film. Some people have done some digging, and the definitive thing came out recently through, I can't even remember who wrote it now, who basically said after doing some digging, finding out the facts, no, that is William Goldman's script on screen. And Robert Redford is talking out of his ass, basically. So it's very, very interesting. This thing has caused so much controversy now.
I'm looking for a Jehovah reference there as well. I was.
How can I was about to say, how can I fit the gerbil in? But no.
That's what your gear, guys. What your gear. So let's put this controversy aside and basically just look at the film as a film. And basically, this is a genius piece of political thriller. And as you say, it stands as just a thriller on its own right, but it's also an amazing piece of history.
Absolutely.
This was the downfall of President Nixon, basically, and it's a really, really good film, well worth watching. Your number one?
My number one is Frost Nixon.
Very nice.
Good film.
Now I watched that recently, and I've got to say that I love films where you can just hold two incredible actors on opposite sides of a table and just do a scene that works. Like, my favorite scenes are always, like, my top five scenes all are these kinds of scenes, like things like heat in the cafe and stuff like this. It's like if you can put two actors that just have enough presence to fill a room with it, and this is what you got with this. These big long conversations that they have, like over shot work and the great sort of camera work that is very digital, kind of like, you know, interviews and stuff like that. Just absolutely terrific.
And you know, there was some controversy that came out about it, saying if you actually watch the Frost Nixon tapes, Nixon isn't like that at all. And I mean, I've watched the Frost Nixon tapes, and they did take a lot of artistic liberty with it, you know, with the film. But that doesn't matter. The film as a film is a powerful piece
that's,
of drama.
And that's, you know? That's what you've got to base it on. Yeah. It's like, look, I mean, at the end of the day, whatever happened in real life aside, it's like that movie still holds me.
Absolutely. And I think every now and again, Ron Howard pulls it out of the bag. Yeah. You know? And I think he used to pull it out of the bag a lot more often than he does now. And I think now he kind of is really hit and miss with me, you know? Yeah. For every Frost Nixon, you get a Da Vinci Code, you know?
Yes.
I really wish he would just settle down a little bit and go back to some of the stuff he used to do, because he was so good at it, you know? Some of his, I mean, you could go back to his early 80s, where you go Cocoon, Splash, you know, Apollo, you go into the 90s, you get Apollo 13, you know? He was a director who I wouldn't miss.
Mm.
And now I kind of go, Ron Howard, you know. But yeah, Frost Nixon was very, very good stuff.
And I think it's like what I was saying before about the timing of it. It came at a time when people wanted to question the president of the United States. Sure, it wasn't the current president at the time, but it really had that same sort of one person
standing. It was definitely having a jab at Bush.
Absolutely. So it was perfect timing and it really powerful as a result.
Yeah, it was very good. Mm. You're number one. Before you say, I'm dying to know. The fact that you moved Mr. Smith and all the president's men down that list, I want to know what this number one is.
I could not move it out of the way for anything less than Dr. Strangelove or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb.
God, I can't believe I didn't even think of that one. I cannot believe I didn't think about that one. I'll say that one more time. I cannot believe I didn't think about that one. Yes.
Yeah.
Tell me.
Well, look, I don't even think we need to say anything more than that. I mean, it's Stanley Kubrick's finest moment, and out of many fine moments.
Yeah.
I have seen this movie countless times. I could quote it left, right, and center. I mean, gentlemen, no fighting. We're in the war room. Yeah. I mean, it's just absolutely perfect, spot-on political satire. There are times when it's so close to being a documentary and other times where it's so clear that it's a spoof. I mean, you've got Peter Sellers playing, was it three roles in there, I think?
He's the little major guy. He's Strangelove. He's the president.
Maybe it's four roles. I can't remember. There's a few roles in there. Anyway, and you know, him as Strangelove, desperately trying to hold down a Nazi salute. You know,
also one of the finest things George C. Scott ever did. I mean, George C. Scott is so good in that film.
To me, the writing on that scene, it's just Peter. When you think about it, it's just Peter Sellers by himself talking on a telephone to allegedly the Russian president, and it's like, I know you're upset. I know. I'm sad about this too.
Also, the reaction from George C. Scott when Strangelove is outlining the plan and saying how there's going to be more women to men, and suddenly George C. Scott just kind of perks up in the background, going, "Really? Oh, okay."
I mean, there's so many things in there. There's the general in there who thinks that there's a communist plot to to put fluoride in the water. There's the iconic scene, which was of course parodied in The Simpsons, of
Slim Pickens on the bomb.
On the bomb, which will be just if that was the only scene in the film, it would be the best movie ever made. Yeah. But it's absolutely spot on, perfect political satire. It is a comedy.
Pitch perfect film. Yeah. There is not a miss in that film.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen Dr. Strangelove, I think you need to stop everything and go watch it. It's like, it's one of those ones where you go, okay, put a pause on life for 2 hours and see this movie, because this is a movie that is going to be around forever.
Stanley Kubrick's films have all come out again in a new box set on Blu-ray, so there's your excuse.
I saw that.
I was lucky enough to see a print of Dr. Strangelove on the big screen not too long ago at the Chevelle Cinema here in Sydney, which is closed at the moment, I think, for renovations, which is a shame.
I saw it at the Astor about 15 years ago, probably.
And look, if you see it coming up in one of those screenings, do yourself a favor. Oh God, I sound like Molly Meldrum now. you know, really just get along and see it. But in any format it's in, it's perfect.
Look, I know you could say that about a couple of Kubrick's films. I mean, if you ever see 2001 screening, this is a film you need to see on the big screen to understand why it influenced a generation. You need to see Doctor Strangelove on the big screen. You need to see Full Metal Jacket on the big screen.
Full Metal Jacket is one
of those films where I have to say the first 45 minutes of the film is so unrelentingly insulting to you as a person that if it had gone on any longer, I think I would have shot myself. You know, and you can really, he really just nailed that, because you sit there going, I don't know how much more of this man I can take. And then it ends. And you go, your timing is perfect. You know, your timing is just perfect. He was an amazing director who unfortunately went out on Eyes Wide Shut, which is a real shame. It's a real shame that
because it had Nicole Kidman in it.
Yeah, it's a real shame that that's his legacy now. That's the one that
actually had a Tom Cruise in it. What am I
talking
about?
Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman. Come on,
which is the lesser of two evils.
it's like heading into a black hole.
It's interesting you guys say that, because my belief has always been that what happened with this film...
Is it killed him?
No. He did this. He's like a superhero. He did this film to break up that terrible relationship between the two of them. It's like just by sitting them down and forcing them to be
to
close
admit that
to each
both
other.
Gay? What?
Exactly. just admit that there was never a sexual connection between you guys and just break that up. That was his go. That was what he went out on. He went out on breaking up one of Hollywood's
oldest...
That's
one way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which case, we salute you, Stanley Kubrick.
Exactly. And that's what I let you go out on. I'm like, thank you. Thank you.
What a very strange way to end our list.
Can I mention a couple of my also-rans just while I'm
okay,
here?
Okay, as long as you let me mention a couple also-rans.
Yeah. If you start with that speech again, I'm going to slap. We're running out of time.
Have I mentioned it now? There's a couple in there. Charlie Wilson's War was one that came up a couple
years
ago,
like
which was really good.
War.
And it didn't make it on the main list, but I quite liked it. Citizen Kane's one we've all forgotten to mention.
That's true, we did.
Could be a reason for that. It's one of those films.
No, I actually love it. It's so funny. We have a household in turmoil because I love Citizen Kane. My wife hates it. And so it's like,
Well, this thing, I read a piece a couple of years ago, maybe it was earlier this year, about the film canon and about the need for a film canon. And I actually do think there is a need to have some kind of benchmarkable list. But it's so subjective. But one thing that...
And that's right.
Yeah,
you can't.
That's so. Where you can't. But the thing is, at the end of the day, Citizen Kane's always at number one. And I don't necessarily think it should be, because it's one of those things that got stuck on the list really, really early. In the piece.
Yeah, no, I agree with
and,
that.
And it's no one's ever thought to change it. It's like, oh, well, no, Citizen Kane will start there, and then we'll work our way down. It's a great film, and for the time, or not just for the time, it was with everything that was working against Orson Welles, to get that film out of it. Was,
yeah, well, not
was
only that,
you know.
I think the film is also deserves a spot in the top 10 lists of all time.
Absolutely.
Because of the new techniques that were created to make that film. That film heavily influences filmmakers. Right,
it's undoubtedly a masterpiece, but I think it's one of those films that does need to be reassessed every few decades. Mm. And look, you know, for me, the problem is the assumption that films that have died in 1976 and everything else is a pale imitation of it, you know. You know, that's my problem with these canon lists, just to get off the track.
Well, I have a problem with canon lists as well, because they refuse to put anything new on it, and you sit there and go, there's still stuff being
made
today.
Which is why I think lists like these are great, because they're just personal lists, you know. We can say, hey, look, you know, I think I put Silent Night, Deadly Night on a list last week.
Yeah,
it's not
did.
The, you know, I love it.
Yeah,
and
I'm getting
thing
that
about,
film, by
you know,
the way.
We all want to see it again now.
and another film which might be controversial is Godzilla.
Which version?
The original Godzilla. Because let's we forget, it's 1954, I think it came out.
The original Toho classic.
And the original, I mean, look, it's a great film for many reasons, but let's face it, this is a movie that's anti-nuke.
Yeah, and you've got to see the version before the Americans got to it and inserted
Raymond Burr into
it. You've got to see the original.
Which is really interesting, because I think the Madman DVD that's out, and there's three great sets. For these DVDs that are out here from the Eastern Eye label here in Australia, three great sets of all the original Godzilla films, and they have both versions of the original on that set. So that's fantastic. But think about it, this: is less than 10 years after Hiroshima and Nagasaki that they made this film about the dangers,
the horrors of war.
And, you know, and this is obviously a theme that's run throughout Japanese film over the last half century. We mentioned Akira last week, which is you know, the ultimate kind of anti-nuclear polemic sort of thing. But, you know, I think Godzilla is often overlooked. Sci-fi generally is often overlooked.
Sci-fi is always overlooked.
As a great political platform, because sci-fi does what no other genre can, which is talk about politics, frankly, in a way that people won't necessarily, which is X-Men at its best does that.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. To bring it back to the theme of
there
this
you go.
Week. Yeah. So we'll get back there eventually.
Have you got any more?
No, that's it.
I just want to throw out two really quick ones. We didn't mention Primary Colors, which is the film about basically a thinly veiled look at Clinton's run, which had a stellar performance by Travolta. Is it? Yeah, it's Travolta.
Travolta.
as Clinton, who was just amazing.
Clinton.
And the other one, I brought it up on the list before, which is why it didn't make the list, but I think it is actually a film worth mentioning, which is The American President, which is just a fluffy romantic comedy, but it is about politics, and it is about trying to get a bill through. And throughout all the way through it, it's this lesson in how to get a bill pushed through politics. And it's a really fine film. And Aaron Sorkin's script is really good in that film. Anyway, so there's our lists. A couple things to mention really quickly. Also threw down The Queen was one we didn't talk about as well, which is also a really good look at power plays between a prime minister and the queen, which I thought was very interesting. All right, let's wrap this puppy up because we're running way late again, as usual, and say anything to add, Josh? No, you've already closed your laptop. In your mind, you're already gone.
No, actually, it was just starting to kick into high gear on the fans, so enough. I turned
all right, it off. If you agree or disagree with anything that we've had to say on this show, you can send your feedback to feedback@filmactually.com, or you can send us a voicemail, 02801131167, or if you are outside of Sydney, you can use our Skype ID, geekactually, all one word. Mm-hmm. Get merchandise, join the fan page, join us on Twitter, any of our links, basically any link that we have. Just go to geekactually.com. There's a follow us button right there on the front. You can find out all about us. And do listen to our other show, Geek Actually, which is basically our weekly tech and geeky geek out. That's one way of putting it, I guess. I don't know. You can find that on iTunes. Just search for Geek Actually, or you can find all back episodes on geekactually.com. Watch us record the show live every Saturday. Typically, we start our broadcast day at 12 p.m.-ish, Australian Eastern Day, Eastern Standard Time now, UTC plus 10. Geekactually.com/live. The Film Actually show generally starts around the 1:30, 1:40 mark, depending on how we went with Geek Actually before. Charlie and Brad are back, so I just got to throw out a quick shout-out to them. They were the former hosts of the Movie Fan House. Movie Fan House is no longer there, but their website is up now, reboundradio.com, and their new podcast is coming soon. So go support them. They are well worth checking out their reviews and so forth. Richard, tell us a little bit about where people can find you.
You can find me in two places online. You can find me on therealbits.com, that's REELBits.com, and DVDBits.com. And I should give a shout out to Julian because he's here, and I write for him occasionally too, at thecinema.net.
Cool.
And if you're looking for me everywhere else, I'm on Twitter at DVD Bits.
Or hanging out with J.J. Abrams.
Actually, speaking of J.J. Abrams, I want to give a really big plug. We're running a competition at the moment.
Oh, yes.
It's a Super 8 giveaway. We're giving away a Super Super 8 giveaway. There's a camera, there's a T-shirt, there's a bag. If you don't win the major prize, there's LED lights in there because everyone loves LED lights.
Of course.
If you don't win that, you can stand to win a Super 8 T-shirt, which is kind of cool anyway. Thanks to Paramount, we've got that to give away. So hit up therealbits.com and you could win.
I'm going to go enter. And Josh, where can we find out more about you?
RoDLC.com is a gaming website. Head over there and check it out. We have a live show Tuesday at 8 p.m., which will be coming out from this studio again for a second week. And of course, make sure you check out Cinefools. I've got a bunch of reviews up there at the moment, and there will be a Super 8 one up later this week.
Cool. All right. We also want to do two more shout-outs. I think it's two, three. I don't know. Whatever. Rachel over at the Funky Film Show, she gave us a nice plug this week, so we give her a nice plug back. She's Thursdays on Radio Fremantle 107.9 FM. Or if you can't catch it live or you're not in Fremantle, go to RadioFremantle.com and you can listen to the last episode. And we also have to have one big shout-out to our good friends over at the Real Junkies podcast, REEL Junkies. There you can find them at WeekendRonan.com, or you can search for them on iTunes. They are a movie podcast like us, but they like to drink tequila and get drunk while they're doing it, so it's a lot of fun, and they are well worth listening to. If you can find out more about our cartoonist who did our wonderful pictures on our website, he's Josh Spencer over at attackninja.blogspot.com. Now, we're finishing the show this week. We don't have the soundtrack to X-Men First Class because I went to look it up, and it actually doesn't get released until July.
Wow.
I thought, well, that sucks. So we are going to finish with something X-Men related, though. So what I did was I've dug up the track, The Suite from X2 from John Ottman's score for X-Men 2. So that's what we're going to finish the show with today. And if there is nothing else to add, I don't think there's anything else to add. Anybody got anything? No?
Nope.
In that case, we're going to say, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we will catch you all next week. Thank you, chat room. Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Josh. What are you pointing at?
Well, I was going
to... I thought you were telling me something.
Thank you. Let me try that again.
He's being gangster, man. Thank you, chat room. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And we'll see you all next week. Bye now.